All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. One artist, three songs. Request them now. We'll play them later. Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. All right. I would like to welcome to the show Don Kay, who is an entertainment journalist. He writes for Den of Geek, and he's here to talk about some of the recent pieces that he's written for Den of Geek. You can follow him at Don Kay on Twitter, K-A-Y-E. On Twitter, K-A-Y-E. And we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about. Incredibles 2 opens up in a couple of weeks, and he went to Pixar. He actually went to Pixar, wrote about it, and saw the first 20 minutes of the movie and a preview. We're also going to talk about the world of the Planet of the Apes. He wrote about that, and we were talking about giant monsters and monster movies yesterday, and he also wrote a piece about Godzilla and King Kong and where do the monsters go next. So lots of fun stuff, and you can check him out at denofgeek.com. And let's welcome Don Kay to the show. Don, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Nick. Great to be back.
Yeah. So, let's see. Let's start with The Incredibles. You actually went. First of all, tell me about the Pixar animation. You went to Pixar animation. That must have been something.
I did. They had sort of an early press day for The Incredibles, for The Incredibles 2, I should say, and they had a bunch of journalists go up to the Pixar campus, as they call it, and that's a good word for it, because it kind of does look like a college campus. It's got these kind of rolling lawns, except there's also these big kind of statues of Pixar characters kind of scattered around the place. And it's a it's a pretty interesting place. As I said, it does have kind of a college campus vibe, but there's just all this great art on the walls and mementos and artifacts around, and it's obviously a very creative place, and obviously a place where a lot of great entertainment is made.
Yeah. Well, how big a place is it? Is it sprawling? Is it huge?
It's pretty sprawling. I didn't get into all of it. Funnily enough, when we were there, certain areas, I guess, were off limits where they're working on various projects or whatever top secret stuff they're doing there. So I didn't get to see all of it, but there are a bunch of buildings. It's kind of like a long central, I guess you could say, promenade or walkway that goes through it. Again, kind of a university feel. I wouldn't say maybe quite as big as like a big college campus or something like that. But certainly a fairly sprawling place. There's these rolling lawns. When you go outside, there's people go out there and kick balls around and things like that. So very nice vibe.
Cool. Now, before we get back to talking about Pixar and Incredibles 2, because you saw the first 20 minutes of it, give everybody your background. You've been writing now. How long have you been writing with Den of Geek, and how did you get into entertainment journalism?
I've been with Den of Geek for about, I guess I'm in my fifth year with them now. I've written for a lot of different outlets over the years. I started quite some years back. I started out actually as a music rock journalist. Wrote for a lot of rock and metal magazines. Wrote film stuff here and there for a number of years. I used to write for a magazine called Fangoria, which was sort of the preeminent horror magazine.
We've talked about that before.
We talked about that before.
Very close to my heart. Fangoria is very close to my heart.
As it is mine and a lot of other people. And then from there, once things started moving online, I started doing more stuff online. I wrote for MSN. The Microsoft sort of online portal. I wrote for them for a number of years. I was one of their lead writers on the film side. Written for a bunch of various websites as well. Den of Geek is kind of my main site now. I also write for sci-fi.com, which is the Sci-Fi Channel's official website. Occasionally for Fandango, various other things here and there.
Well, great. All right. So I wanted to give everybody a little intro for people who haven't heard you before on the show. So you visited Pixar, and then you were part of the press conference that they had with the people behind it, like Brad Bird and Nicole Grindel and John Walker. What was that like?
It was very it was interesting, because it was the first time I think Brad had really spoken publicly at length about the movie. They've been very busy making it. I don't know if you know a little bit of the history, but initially this was supposed to come out, I believe, next year, and Toy Story 4 was going to come out this year. But Toy Story 4, I guess, has run into some script issues and some production delays and that sort of thing, some development things. So they came to a decision at some point to switch Toy Story 4 and The Incredibles 2, because The Incredibles 2 was sort of further along the track. So, but nevertheless, they've still been very busy. It's come together fairly quickly. And I think this was the first kind of lengthy sort of speaking to the press that he had done. So the press conference itself was, press conferences can be, as you know, nothing too exciting, but he certainly delved, Brad did most of the talking, and he certainly delved into what he was aiming for with this movie, why it's been 14 years since the last movie, that sort of thing.
It's amazing that it's been 14 years. I can't believe it's been that long. It's crazy.
Yeah, it really is crazy when you think about it. But he basically said, he wanted to wait till he had a story to tell, and he wanted it to be the right story. He didn't want to rush it. He was doing other things, of course, as well, making other movies over there, and live action movies as well. And then he finally, he had his idea and he ran with it. So here we are.
And it's interesting because, if anybody who has seen the trailers or anything, and you've seen the first 20 minutes of the movie.
I saw the whole movie tonight.
Oh, you saw the movie? They're starting to screen it now because it opens in a couple of weeks. Yeah,
it opens in a couple of weeks. Yeah. They're doing press here in L.A. And so last night and tonight were some of the first press screenings. I'm under embargo.
Right.
I can't go too deeply into it, but I can say it's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of action. It looks great, and I think fans will be pleased.
Anybody who has seen the commercials for the new one realize that 14 years has not passed in the characters' lives.
That's exactly right. And that was one of the, in fact, the new movie, I can say this because this is out there, the new movie literally picks up right where the old one left off. When Brad spoke about this at the press conference, one of the things he said was he didn't want to tell a story about the kids being adults 14 years later. He didn't want Jack to be a teenager, getting ready to go to college,
right,
or something like that.
Right, right.
He wanted to continue with the characters as they were, and, it's his movie. He can do whatever the hell he wants, I guess.
Absolutely. I think that's a good decision, quite frankly. I know it's been a long time since the movie came out, but I love those characters the way they were in the first film. And, it would have been interesting to see the dynamic of how they've aged, but, everybody knows the characters as they are, in the first film, and I think that was a good decision.
I think so, too. And I actually think, there's certainly room for him to go that route if he wants in another movie. If he comes back,
sure,
and does a third one or a fourth one, they can certainly. I think he wanted to bring everybody back to the characters as they remembered them, kind of bring you back into that world. And I think from this point, if he wants to start stretching it out, he probably could.
It's interesting, these movies take years to make. I'm sure people are aware of how painstaking it is, and from the point of inception to the final release of the movie, it's years to make these kind of movies. What's interesting to me is that Toy Story 4 is in production, and as you said, they did the switcheroo here. I'm wondering if they got to record Don Rickles before he passed in Toy Story 4.
Apparently they did not. I don't have that in front of me, but I had seen some information recently that they didn't get a chance to do that.
Okay.
He unfortunately passed before they started. So, okay. Yeah, that's one of the sad things about that.
Yeah, we'll have a new Mr. Potato Head. It won't be the same, though.
No, in front of, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. That's great that you got to go to Pixar. They do such great work, and it's interesting. Right here in town, Don, we have the Museum of Science and Industry, which is one of my favorite museums in the city, and they are doing the Science Behind Pixar exhibit right now.
Oh, that's fascinating. Have you been down there?
No, I haven't been there yet, but I didn't even know about it until we were actually driving down through downtown, and I saw a banner for it, and I got very excited because I didn't know that Museum of Science and Industry was running this exhibit with Pixar. So
I think they had it here in L.A., I'm trying to. I know I didn't get to it, but I remember them having it maybe not too long ago. So it must be on tour, and you guys are lucky enough to get it now.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to it. Well, great. And by the way, these articles about Incredibles 2, you got a first look at it. Your visit to Pixar, the stuff with Brad Bird talking about the journey to Incredibles 2, all available on denofgeek.com. Denofgeek.com, right there. Now, Incredibles is animated. It's also science fiction, and you also wrote about how Planet of the Apes Apes kicked off the first sci-fi film saga. Planet of the Apes, one of the most incredible movies. It's 50 years old this year, which is makes me crazy. Makes me feel very old. It's 50 years old this year, and kicked off a series of movies, a TV show, an animated series, and then the reboots began in 2011. Talk a little bit about the piece that you wrote for Planet of the Apes.
Well, Planet of the Apes is one of my all-time favorite movies.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt, to me, it's like a perfect movie. Everything about that film I love so much. I think it's got to this day, I still think it's got the greatest ending shot of all time.
Oh yeah,
it is one of the most I think iconic science fiction films ever made, and it also is very in its way it was very pioneering in the film business because. It did a couple of things for the first time. Planet of the Apes was the first film series to actually tell a story over several films. They'd been sequels before, but they were sequels that just kind of told a whole new story, like the James Bond movies, for example.
Right.
Or even old, you know, going back into the old films, detectives, things from the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
They never continued the story.
And like the Mon Pa Kettle movies, those kind of things, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Planet of the Apes was the first film series to actually pick up the story, tell a new chapter, and then actually bring it full circle, which was another amazing thing that they brought the whole thing almost back to the beginning over the course of five movies. It was also the first in terms of merchandising. No one had done merchandising for films like had been done for Planet of the Apes in terms of toys and games and action figures and play sets, many of which I had and
yep.
wish I still had because I could probably retire if I could sell them.
I had a ton of Planet of the Apes stuff too, and I don't know where it is. But I had my favorite was I had the ape mask and the rifle. It was like a set that had a rifle and an ape mask. So you put.
I had that same thing.
it was the best thing ever. It was outstanding. Listen, hang on one second, okay?
You bet.
All right. Let's see. Don Kay is with us. He's an entertainment journalist. He writes for Den of Geek. And we will come back and talk more about Planet of the Apes and a couple of pieces he wrote about that and more right here on 720 WGN. We'll break and come back. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue, and we are here until 5 a.m. It's Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in right now. It's one artist, three songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later, 312-981-7200. We got a lot of stories that we're going to talk about. We're playing a little catch-up on some stories that we wanted to talk about and had run out of time. So we're going to do like a bunch of little stories, talk about those, and open up the phone lines, including the history of the drive-in, because it's drive-in time. So we'll talk about that and more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. And the best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is Don Kay. He's an entertainment journalist. He writes for Den of Geek, and he has written several pieces here that we're going to discuss. Before the break, we started talking about the Planet of the Apes and how it kicked off the first sci-fi film saga, and we'll talk more about that right now as we welcome Don back to the show. Don, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. So let's get back to talking about Planet of the Apes. Before we get into some of the stuff that you wrote, and then you specifically wrote about Beneath the Planet of the Apes, which is a very, very interesting movie. Planet of the Apes, can you tell me about you remember the first time that you saw it?
I do. Funnily enough, I saw it last of the original movies, because I was very young when I saw those movies. My mom, bless her heart, she did take me to see all of them in the theater at a very young age.
Yeah.
I don't know what she was thinking.
Yeah.
But I didn't actually see. Now, the first one came out in 1968, so I was too young to see it at that point.
Yes.
But by the time the last one came out, Battle for the Planet of the Apes, in 1973, they were doing these Go Ape marathons. I'm
yep.
sure you remember those.
Absolutely.
Run,
yep.
Yeah, they'd run 2, 3, 4, or sometimes all five of the films over the course of one day. And my mom took me to see Battle for the Planet of the Apes, but it was on a double feature with Planet of the Apes. And so that was the first time I actually got to see the original Planet of the Apes, and I was very, very happy about that.
I saw I was in 68, I was three, so I was too young to have seen it. But I did see it upon a re-release, probably when I was six, so like 3 years after it was released. And mm-hmm. I did see the first one first, and then I remember seeing Beneath at the drive-in, and it scared the hell out of me when I was a little kid. That the creatures, you know, the people that are underneath the earth. This Victor Buono was in that movie, if I remember correctly.
Victor Buono,
yeah.
Better known as King Tut from the Batman TV series.
Yeah, and I remember when they unmasked themselves, it scared the hell out of me, and that movie freaked me out. And then I saw all the other ones in the theater, and it was and like you, I did go ape over those movies. I loved those movies, and I remember here in Chicago, we used to have Ape Week on the 3:30 movie. On you know, locally here on Channel 7, they would do the 3:30 movie. It would be on from 3:30 to 5 before the news every weekday. And they would do Ape Week, and they'd run all five movies. Unfortunately, it was a 90-minute time slot with commercials, so when they ran these movies, especially the first one, because the first one's like over 2 hours, they would cut out 45 minutes of the movie.
You know, Nick, we have a very eerie parallel existence going on because, like you, I saw Beneath the Planet of the Apes in a drive-in. I was 5 years old in 1970.
Yeah.
I remember sitting in the back seat. I was in my PJs.
Yep.
And when the mutants underground took their masks off and revealed their true faces,
man.
It scarred me for a life.
Absolutely. Scared me to death. So scary. And, also specifically you wrote about Beneath the Planet of the Apes, which is a very strange movie if you go back and look at it. And talk a little bit about how Heston didn't want to do it, and that's why they got James Franciscus, who, like, looks like him.
Yeah, exactly. They couldn't get Heston to come back for the whole movie. They convinced him to come back for a couple of scenes at the beginning and then a couple of scenes at the end. So they thought, well, there's this guy James Franciscus. You know, maybe if we put him in, people won't notice because he kind of looks like Heston.
That's such a great decision creatively.
So it was a very, very weird movie. They went through a lot of drafts. They had a lot of different scripts for it. They weren't really sure how to continue the story. There's some great books out there about this, and there's also some great online history about it that you can find. That they went through so many different storylines. The original director didn't want to come back. Heston didn't want to come back. Roddy McDowall was absent for that one. They had no-name British actor underneath the Cornelius makeup, and again, they thought, well, no one's going to notice
right.
He's under makeup. So it's kind of like a weird hodgepodge of a movie, a lot of different ideas thrown together. But what's funny about it is that I do love it because it is so completely insane.
It is. Yeah.
It's a really nutty movie. It's got one of the bleakest endings of all time, and it's just crazy.
It is a crazy movie, and it's so much different than the first one, and that's one of the reasons why I think people found it so jarring, especially young people. And then, you know, they continued with the series after Beneath. After Beneath was Escape, and Roddy McDowall came back for that one, obviously. And then,
yeah, right.
My favorite of the series, obviously, is the original, but my favorite of the sequels. Is easily Conquest. I love Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. I remember the first time I saw that movie, I saw it in a theater downtown here in Chicago, and it was predominantly an African-American audience. And I remember during the climax of that movie, the theater just went nuts. I mean, the whole audience was just just going crazy. And I think it really hit a nerve. It struck a nerve. And I remember talking to one of my friends about it, who happens to be African American, and said that was a movie that really resonated with African Americans at that time.
Yeah, there are a lot of sort of anecdotal stories about screenings of that film in predominantly African American neighborhoods where the audiences it did tap a nerve, as you say.
Yeah.
The film was probably the most politically minded of the Apes movies.
Yeah.
And it came out at a time when there were riots going on in different cities, and there were a lot of tensions happening, a lot of things going on, and Conquest just kind of tapped into that for a lot of people, and it was also very violent, and it got it actually got trimmed. They took a few minutes out of it to get the PG rating, which I think they've put back in now on the Blu-rays. So if you watch the if you get one of the Blu-rays of Conquest, I think you can see kind of an alternate version of it that's a little bit more violent, a little bit more of a grim ending. But it was a very kind of politically minded movie for its time. And, you know, these are considered kids' movies, so it was kind of heavy going at the time.
It was. It's a film that of when I go back and revisit these movies, and I do, this one seems to be the one I go back to the most. And I know that they changed the ending because they dubbed over, they had Roddy McDowall come back and dub over a more positive ending, where he tells the apes to put down their weapons and, you know, and have peace instead. But that's not how the original ending was.
No, it wasn't. The original ending was didn't have any of that. It just had Roddy McDowall as Caesar, the leader of the ape rebellion, standing there watching the city go up in flames and watching his army of apes murder the human governor and all his aides. Basically saying that it was our time now.
Yeah.
So they did the studio, 20th Century Fox, I guess, took a look at that and said, this is too dark. Like, we can't have this. And McDowell came back. They weren't able to reshoot the scene, so
right.
they dubbed the dialogue and they kind of edited it in a way you don't actually see his mouth moving a
right.
lot in
exactly.
the last couple of minutes.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
he does say some additional lines
there's
about
like,
it.
There's like close-ups of Caesar's eyes a lot.
Exactly.
During that, so you couldn't see his mouth move. But no, but I still I love that one. Battle has always been disappointing to me. I thought it ended on kind of a low note. The five films.
Yeah, it did. That was really a last-ditch effort to milk a few more bucks out of the series. The thing is, too, the funny thing is back then with sequels were considered, just quick moneymakers. So they would cut the budget every time out, whereas nowadays, you know, you make the Avengers for, you know, $180 million, well, you make the Avengers 2 for $250 million.
Exactly.
Back in those days, you know, the first Apes movie was the most expensive. By the time they got to the fifth one, they were making it for two nickels and a, you know, couple strands of cotton.
Exactly.
So,
and you can tell the makeup effects are not, are pretty bad, and the sets look cheesy. It's a very cheap-looking film.
Yeah, definitely. They shot it all in a back lot in back of the Fox studio. They used, they took the cheap way out with the masks. Instead of doing like full makeup, they just kind of threw masks on people's heads, and you could tell they were kind of running out of gas at that point.
Yeah, no question about it. And then they went on to a TV series. Did you watch the TV series when you were young?
I did, and it was a great disappointment to me that it only got canceled after 13 or 14 episodes.
Yeah.
But I do remember watching it, and I don't think it was such a great show, but I was just happy to have it on as a kid, something to look forward to on a Friday night.
Yeah.
And I was kind of bummed when they took it off.
Yeah, me too. And I loved it, you know, because I loved everything that was Planet of the Apes related, you know, clearly. Then we flash forward a bunch of years. Tim Burton decides that he's going to remake Planet of the Apes, and it's easily Tim Burton's worst movie, and one of the worst ideas ever was to remake that movie. Did you see that one in the theater?
I did see it in the theater. I hated it.
Yeah.
I mean, so the makeup effects were great.
Yeah.
Some of the performances were good. Tim Roth was really good, I remember.
Yep.
I didn't care for Mark Wahlberg. He was the astronaut in that film. Too many in-jokes, too many little kind of cute homages to the originals, and a very confusing and kind of really silly story. And I agree. I think it's one of Burton's, if not his worst, one of his worst for sure.
Yeah, and the ending was so stupid. I remember the first time. Well, I've only seen it once. When I saw it and that ending happened, I was like, "You gotta be kidding me!" It was just so bad, and so that's why in 2011, when they were going to reboot the series, I went in with such negative. I went in with no expectations whatsoever. It was a movie that was released in August. I think it was late August, which is usually a dumping ground for terrible movies. The last time anybody tried to do a Planet of the Apes movie was the Burton film, and then I was so genuinely surprised by how good Rise was. I think all three of the new ones are great.
They really are, and you're absolutely right. Fox didn't really know what they had. With that first movie, with Rise of the Planet of the Apes, they put it out in August, like you said, which is not a big great release month for really good movies.
Right.
they barely marketed it. I remember there was very little. There were very few press screenings. There's only a couple of press screenings for it, which is normally not the case.
Yeah.
I think they felt like they were almost trying to bury it. And to, I think, their surprise and everybody's surprise, this was a really, really strong movie, followed up by an even stronger one 3 years later with Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is my favorite of those three.
Me too. That's my favorite, too. The second one is my favorite, too.
And yeah,
I loved War. I know War didn't do as well, but I thought it was great, and I thought it brought it full circle. And I think the performance by, I think all the performances are good, but Andy Serkis's performance, of course, is not going to be as recognized simply because people don't understand the hard work that goes into it. They just think, oh, it's animated.
Yeah, no, the people don't realize what goes into the motion capture. He did phenomenal work in those movies,
yeah.
And that trilogy really is one of the great examples of three movies, like consistent all the way through.
Yep.
The third one didn't do as well at the box office, so I think it remains to be seen if they're going to, you know, try and continue the franchise.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Okay. Don, can you hang on?
You bet.
All right, hold on a second. Here's Don Kay is with us, and he writes for Den of Geek, and we're going to talk more. We're going to talk a little bit about the universe of Godzilla and King Kong. So we'll do that right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. You know what that means. One artist, three songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's all coming up. Don Kay is with us. He's an entertainment journalist. He writes for Den of Geek and other places. We were talking a little bit about his trip to Pixar and how he saw Incredibles 2. And before the break, we were talking about the Planet of the Apes celebrating its 50th anniversary and that incredible series. And let's welcome Don back to the show. Don, welcome back.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. So you wrote a piece about Godzilla and King Kong. Where do the monsters go next? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, they rebooted Godzilla in 2014 with a movie that I thought was not great, but very good. Had a lot of good points to it, let's say.
Yeah.
And then they came back a couple of years later with Kong Skull Island, which was sort of a soft reboot of the King Kong franchise. And then what they did was they sort of connected the two. What they did was they created an agency called the Monarch Agency, that was a sort of secret scientific military network that was studying and following the rise and development or resurfacing of these giant monsters throughout the Earth,
right?
Including Godzilla, including Kong, including some of the other creatures that were on Skull Island with Kong. And at the end of Kong Skull Island, they hinted at the arrival of very famous Japanese monsters like Rodan and King Ghidorah and Mothra. And the next movie that's coming up is called Godzilla, King of the Monsters. That's going to be out in, I want to say 2020 on that. They're still filming it. And that will be a film that in which Godzilla will face off against some of the other classic monsters from the old Japanese films. And then the plan after that is to do Godzilla versus Kong, which will bring those two back together for the title bout, so to speak.
Yeah.
So they've created they're in the process of creating another one of these film shared universes about these giant monsters. And the first two films both did pretty well, not super blockbusters, but well enough that they want to keep going with it.
Yeah. Well, I'm a fan of I like the Godzilla, the 2014 Godzilla more than I like Skull Island. I thought Skull Island was fun. It was silly. But Godzilla, the 2014 version of Godzilla, I thought was dark. And in tone, it was very similar to the 54, the original Godzilla in terms of what its message was and seriously of how kind of dour it was. And I thought the effects were great and the I thought Godzilla looked cool and it was awesome. And Kong Skull Island, I thought was, a very entertaining movie. And, to sit through the entire credits, you sit through all the credits because you mentioned they pull that, little subplot out, but you had to sit through all the credits before that happened. But for it to end with the Godzilla roar, it gave me the chills. I heard Godzilla, I was like, okay, I can't wait for this. Now, like the Planet of the Apes movies, these are movies of my youth. I watched the Kaiju movies when I was a kid constantly. And Godzilla was my favorite and all the creatures and all that stuff. And I'm thrilled that they've decided to bring these things back.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Same thing. I watched these as a kid. You mentioned the 3:30 movie when you were a kid. I grew up in New York City. We had the 4:30 movie every day.
Right.
And they would do the Apes Week, and then the next week would be Godzilla Week, and they'd pick out five random Godzilla movies and run those from Monday to Friday. So that's how I got to see a lot of those when I was a kid. They had a huge impact on me. I loved Godzilla. I loved King Kong. I saw the original King Kong when I was a kid. So having them come back in a very respectful fashion, I think.
Yeah.
Unlike the I didn't care for the 1998 Godzilla that Roland Emmerich directed.
No.
No. Nobody cares for that.
Oh, no.
That movie was a disaster.
Yeah.
But I think the movie that came out in 2014, which this guy Gareth Edwards directed, was, like you say, very similar in tone to the original. A lot of people, when they think of Godzilla movies, they kind of think of guys in rubber suits hitting each other and throwing big boulders at each other. But if you see the original Godzilla, or Gojira, as it was called, in 1954, it is a very, very dark movie.
It is. It is. It is really, really dark. I like the silly ones with the guys in the stupid costumes, and Godzilla dancing around and, all that stuff. I love those movies. I grew up watching them. But, and I like the fact that they are, like you said, taking these characters and these monsters serious as you can. Godzilla, what's amazing, though, you mentioned King Kong, the original King Kong. I saw it on the big screen a couple of years ago, and it's amazing how that movie from 1933, how that movie still holds up and is still as exciting as any adventure movie you'll ever see.
It's true. It's an incredibly exciting movie, groundbreaking for its time, one of the classic films in cinema history, really.
Dom, we'll get you on. We'll get you on again sooner than later. Okay.
Sounds great, Nick. Always always happy to come
back. Okay, great. We'll talk to you soon. Don Kay, everybody. He's an entertainment journalist for Den of Geek, and he is a terrific writer and a really interesting guy, and a guy I really like to talk to. So we'll get him on again soon. You can follow him on Twitter, @DonKay, KAYE. All right, let's take a break. We get the news coming up next here on WGN.